I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. It's not a normal episode, it's a live episode. I always feel like it's been a while since we've done these, but it's always generally about a month. But as I've said before, these are like one of the little highlights of my month, getting to chat with this gang that's sitting in front of me on Zoom. And I should also say that to other Patreons, because there's a few of you, and lots of you haven't actually swung by for a live show. And you can just pop on and have your camera off if you don't want to get stuck in, or you can get, you know, as involved as you'd like, really. But I do want to stress as well, as you're going to find out on this episode, it's not a snobby, elitist thing. It's just a nice gang of people just chatting about records and the memories and such that are attached to them. And tonight, me having a head like a hole, for some reason a few days ago I thought, right, we're doing music videos tonight. And then one of the Patreons, Big Steve, messaged saying, no, I'm sure it's album artwork, which seems to be the consensus of opinion. So we'll see how much we get out of album artwork today, and maybe we'll touch on videos, but we'll definitely do music videos next time if we've got plenty to chat about on the album artwork, which I'm sure we will. I'm going to start things off before we talk about our favourite album artwork. This may well involve one of your favourites. But I'm going to ask the guests that are here tonight, what was the first piece of album artwork that stuck with them? The first thing that really jumped out? Because for me, and I'm pretty sure most of the people on this call are probably a bit younger than me, and some of them not by 20 years, but it would have been at the time when you'd walk past the record shop, but there'd always be album artwork in the windows. And so I just want to ask you, so if there's one particular album that you just remember the cover, didn't even know what it was, what it sounded like or anything, but just struck you and the curiosity made you want to sort of stop and stare. I've just thrown this question together and thrown it at you without any kind of prep. Has anybody got an answer for this that they'd like to sort of start with? Okay, well, yeah. I'll start with Big Steve, seeing as you reminded me today what we was actually doing.
Well, instantly, it's nothing like, it's not like when I was young or whatever, but I remember being on holiday with a mate and we stuck our head in a record shop and there was, on the shelf, this was obviously in the heyday of CDs, there was a CD on the wall by a band called NoFX, who you've interviewed, Eric, didn't you?
Hmm.
And the album's called Eating Lamb, and there's a man and a sheep having a 69. And I instantly saw that and was like, I want to listen to that band and see what it sounds like. And it was great, and consequently, I bought the T-shirt as well, which then got me thrown out of a bar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because people were complaining.
Am I right in saying NoFX have just finished?
Well, they're on their, I think it's 40 cities show it for the end, for they're splitting up after 40 years.
Yeah,
being in the band together.
Yeah, they're a strange band now. Effects, like, people that like them love them, and it's definitely it was like the kind of, when everybody discovered Green Day, everybody, like, you know, the hardcore were going, have you not heard NoFX? And I remember very, you know, going down to Southend, the alternative clubs, and hearing, is it Don't Call Me Why?
Yeah.
And hearing that track, and
Leave It Alone was another.
Yeah. Big one. That's right. And I remember just hearing them on repeat and thinking, who's this? And then, and seeing, like, because there'd always be some sort of cool kids in the club that had NoFX t-shirts and that didn't get thrown out. And it is, the NoFX branding's really solid, isn't it? It's definitely,
oh, yeah,
solid. You can see a mile off. Good shout. Paul, what you got?
Yes, I haven't prepared for this at all, this point. But the first thing that came to mind was saying Pills Metal Box. You know, that sort of like in a film container sort of thing. I just really remember saying that, wondering what the hell is that sort of thing. And it's only been recently that I've actually listened to the album. I'm not a big fan of it, really, to be the truth. Yeah. I do like some Pill, but that particular album, I'm not a big fan of. But it was just like a really, really kind of cool way to display the record. I think they did a reissue a few years back.
I'm sure
those, the original versions, are probably worth quite a bit of money now. Yeah,
absolutely. And it is. It's, I like lots of Pill music. I like stuff like Disappointed, and that was when the track Disappointed, and which was on the album that, and even Don't Ask Me, the stuff that come kind of tail end of the 80s and early 90s when it was very big production. And
yeah,
and I know that all the heads are meant to say that Metal Box is where it's at, but it's a fucking hard listen, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very, very difficult. Yeah,
absolutely. Good shout. Brett,
difficult one to answer. I, as you said that, Paul, I completely changed my mind. I was going to go with the first single and album that I bought, but the one that I've been buying albums for a while, the one that you certainly went, whoa, what's that? What on earth is that? It's Flaunt It by Zig Zig Sputnik. That album cover was just like, and the guy in the record shop in my local town had a massive, great promotional thing. And we were like, what is this? What is? And he wouldn't play it to us. So we had to buy it. Absolute genius. I listened to it earlier. It's terrible.
Oh, really?
It is very dated. It's the same record, same tune, six times or whatever.
Yeah.
But as a kid, I was probably 14, 15, just going, wow, what is that? It's a robot and it's got Chinese movies and this, that and the other. And yeah, we bought it. And yeah, sorry.
Fantastic. Steve, what you got?
Well, the mention of the Pill Box just reminded me of, not of an album, but of a 7-inch that I really liked, was the Garbage Subhuman, and this rubber, the black rubber sort of sleeve thing with that. But for an album, it would be one of sort of the biggest one from the childhood, really childhood, a band that sort of gets mentioned fairly regularly on this podcast. Absolutely, by Madness. It's just, they look cool as anything.
Yeah.
Just reminds you of the video. It's just got the complete nostalgia. I mean, I'm not from London. Camden means absolutely nothing to me apart from Madness. But just that image is just, it just makes me smile, makes me happy. I think it's so good.
That's a great shot. And that's got absolutely written in the little squares along the top, yeah, hasn't it? Yeah. But even on, like,
well, Madness is in the squares and absolutely is not.
That's right. But even, I remember getting, like, the, what's the first album called?
Madness. One Step Beyond.
And on the back of that, like, and on the inner notes, there's like all of like their mates, like Toots and and just seeing, they just looked like a proper gang, didn't they? And it was just like, I saw their mates, and it was like, I want to be one of them mates. They just looks like the most fun band to be in. But also, to go back to what you said about that Garbage single, Garbage, like, whether someone at the label was smart with that, or whether it was Butch or Shirley, but that that them early Garbage singles, I think, like, one of them came in like a plastic case with bubble wrap on. I think that might have been Queer.
That was Milk. That was Milk, I think.
Yeah,
because it's got the little lenticular bit in the in the middle of it.
And I think, yeah, like, all of them, I forgot them next door, but like all of them early singles come in some kind of really cool packaging. Okay, we'll get on to packaging when we actually talk about favourite record sleeves. Newbie, what was the first album piece of artwork that stunned you?
It's weird because it's not exactly artwork and it didn't really stun me. I just remember it standing out in my dad's record collection. And it's a very basic one. It was Making Movies, Dire Straits, which is just the bold red with like a file on its side with a little blue edge. And it just looked like it should belong in a record collection with them all looking like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's weird that a couple of the ones that I'll throw in later are just very vivid memories of like parents' record collections and just seeing the ones that just look the most striking and most interesting. But fantastic. AD, what you got?
Mine's kind of more visual thing as well, because it was probably Adam and the Ants, Prince Charming, just because of how he looked on the front and the blue colour behind. I mean, I was a kid at the time, so the blue was the colour of my favourite crayon. I remember that, thinking that got a blue-green. I just remember thinking that. But then obviously him against that background, dressed the way he was, and then trying to nick my mum's makeup to make myself look like him, you know, because everyone wanted to try that with Adam and the Ants when they were kids, I think. But just visual.
Absolutely. We've just had a message from Kirsten, and she's just said that her piece of album artwork that was the first thing that struck her in the record shop. It's quite surreal because it's Grace Jones' Island Life, and here's mine, which is Grace Jones' Island Life. That's quite weird. A little message just popped up there, and I thought, that's odd. That's mine as well. that was, it was a toy shop. And it was where me and Cunt from Company Gang used to go every Saturday and I'd buy records, he wouldn't. And then when it shut down, this little toy shop, they were selling off all the records really cheap, and I took him in there and I bought Island Life by Grace Jones. And I remember going, right, you need to buy this. And he bought what's the Madness album? Is it Keep On Running? What's it called?
Keep on moving.
And he bought that, and that started his love affair with Madness, which he's very, very, he's an insane Madness fan. Grace Jones was mine as well, and it was just, I'd never seen anything like Grace Jones, you know, and when you opened that album as well, because I went in the shop and opened it. Like, it was all photographs of her, and she just looked bonkers. Well, she is fucking bonkers, but different level cool as well. And, you know, whenever you see footage of her now, I'm not even sure how old Grace Jones is now, but she's just hula hooping through the whole set, still just bossing it and looking like she's been beamed down from outer space.
Have you read her book, Stu? A Life Story?
No, wow, have you?
No, well, my wife has, and she said it's amazing. She gave it to me to read, but the writing's too small.
Old man problems, mate.
I've got very focals now, so I'm going to give it a go. She said it's amazing.
Oh, fantastic.
I really want to get stuck into that.
Well, while you're chatting, Si, what's yours, mate?
I think, first of all, I thought of the like an album that I saw when I was walking through town that drew me in. And then I thought, no, actually, the first album that really just intrigued me, I think, was probably War of the Worlds.
Oh, great.
Good shout.
I think it was, I think it scared me. And I didn't hear it for probably a couple of years before I'd actually seen it. And I even look at it now and I still get that bit scared.
Yeah.
It was scared like when I was a kid. It really did sort of terrify me a bit. And then when you hear it, it's, you know, obviously that's a different story altogether. But
it's equally terrifying on young ears, that record.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? It still scares me a bit now.
Yeah. That's such a good shout, mate. Like that probably maybe would have eclipsed Grace Jones in hindsight. Seeing that in like uncle's record collections and stuff, and then hearing it was like, that's even more terrifying. Okay.
Forever Autumn still makes me cry at any stage. That's one of those ones. Listen to that, I will bawl my eyes out. And I'm going to pull the chain. My brother's father-in-law was one of the producers on that.
Wow.
So he worked with, is it Justin someone from the Moody Blues who wrote it?
Justin Hayward.
He produced the Moody Blues. He was a lovely guy, Tony.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you think, and I'm throwing this open now, that in the digital age, and I know there's a resurgence in vinyl, and I know that we've all probably been over the years diehard vinyl collectors or CD collectors. Do you think the album artwork as an art form is almost a thing of the past now? Artwork is looked upon on a telephone or a laptop. Who wants to go first?
Let's Si go first.
Go on, Si.
I think not album artwork. I would say singles and things like that, probably yes. But people who are going for albums are the ones that give a shit, generally. Yeah. So I don't think that bit is dead. It might be different, but it's definitely not dead.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I just think I look for online for some inspiration today and put in like iconic record covers, and there weren't a lot on there from the last 15 years and or even maybe the last 20 years. But what was you going to say, Steve?
I think it's very genre specific, to be quite honest, because a lot of the stuff that I listen to now, like, you can tell a lot of thought and hard work has gone into the covers. Even just, you know, with merch and everything, you know, the artwork is always like really well thought out, really kind of in keeping with whatever genre a band is. But I think you're kind of more middle of the road, like pop stuff. I think it's just, you know, so long as it looks good in a little thumbnail, I don't think people are bothered. But I do think it's quite genre specific, to be honest.
Rock does, doesn't it? Rock has always has got good artwork.
I missed that.
So rock generally has good artwork, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Whether you're a fan of it or not, but it normally is quite involved, and like Steve said, it's always impressive. Look at Iron Maiden. I know we joke about them, but you look at their artwork through the 80s and stuff, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And if you see Eddie, you instantly know who the band is.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I also think that the concept of buying an album, since things have gone digital, has lost its effect because people buy tracks. Our age, we buy an album, but I mean, I've got teenagers, they'll buy a track, this track, that track, and they'll pick and mix. They won't sit there and buy the whole lot and get the hits, the bangers, the fillers and everything. It's kind of lost its meaning.
It's interesting because, you know, I asked lots of guests this about, you know, track listing and, you know, because you watch documentaries of bands from, you know, previous decades where they talk about sitting at the desk and what tracks made the album and, you know, where they got placed within the album. And it was, and again, I've said this on the podcast, I don't want this to become like, you know, granddad's you know, ranting about how it was better back in the day. But I do, like, I mean, funnily enough, you know, obviously it's not a new artist, but in that Dexy's podcast today, I asked him about album artwork, and because the new album's a concept album, and it tells a story, and when they tour it, they're going to perform the album in the first half as almost as a play. So I think there are still artists doing it, but maybe, I don't know. I was going to say lots of sort of rap artists and that, and I was going to say Eminem, like he came out last year, but that's probably 25 years ago now. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Will there ever be another 3 Feet I Am Rising? What's going on? I don't know. Oh. You know.
Stu, you've done one of my answers, mate.
Oh, no!
Brilliant.
You've got 45, 60 minutes to tell a story, as opposed to you can do bits and pieces with it. I think that's different.
Yeah, absolutely.
The technology makes it different as well.
People that you've interviewed and whatnot, it is varied between genres, and people that are into this sort of album experience will continue to get the album experience. And continue to enjoy it, and people that are just in the I want this song, that song, this song, that's what they'll do, and there's much more sort of scope for people to be able to do that. But it's the lack of the high street experience sort of more that's missing. You're not walking down the high street and seeing banks of records and banks of sort of things. You know, you're having to specifically look for some place that has got a couple. You know, it's not quite the same sort of all-consuming thing when you're walking about the
town. It's going to the record shop, it's knowing the guy behind the thing. You like this, you'll like that, but you won't like that. And developing that sort of love and relationship with the guy in the record shop, knowing what you're doing, what you're into, and introducing you to new music.
Yeah.
I think there's always going to be gatekeepers and people that introduce you to things. It's just, it's kind of changed where that has came from, really.
I do know that when I set up the first podcast and we was doing the artwork for Hardcore Listing, somebody at one of the platforms that we was chatting to said, make sure your thumbnail pops. And it's like, who even sees that? Like, it's so small. But I guess as if you was to use that as a label, then it was, you know, that there was emphasis now on making that thumbnail, which I presume is labels will say the same to artists on you know, when it comes to records and stuff, make that tiny thumbnail pop. They were saying, don't load it with information, just something that's going to sort of prick their attention. And now you think, geez, like, at least back in the day, you had sort of 12 inches worth of a stab at getting someone's attention, but now you've just got this tiny little square that you've got to try and, you know, hook them. But yeah, has anyone ever bought a record on the strength of the sleeve without listening to it?
Yep, loads of times.
Did it all have that super heavy death metal squiggly writing on it, so you bought it on the strength of that sleeve?
not all of them, but some of them did. Now, especially like in the younger days, if you see like a cover and there's like some, I don't know, an autopsy going on or something.
Church on fire.
Blood and guts, any of that. And you think, oh, that might be a bit of me. And then you get home and it's like unlistenable. Done that plenty of times.
I've done a few times based on the label. I mean, when I was DJing a lot, if it was on Defected Records, I'd just buy it.
Yeah.
I'd buy that one because I know they're good. It's what I'm into. But that, that was really, that's the label. I love that.
You mentioned in sort of seeing anything on Defected. Another thing that reminds me of this tiny record shop in Grays was, I reckon about the time I was sort of 10 or 11, the whole window had them like kind of plastic sort of sheets that would hang down that you'd slide all the records in the window. Yep. And I remember one window was just all the different electros, like Street Sounds. And I remember just seeing them and thinking, holy shit, like that artwork like looks like, you know, obviously just getting turned on to like the early mutterings of hip hop and graffiti. And it was like seeing this thing that just Street Sounds, electro. It was like, And the artwork's phenomenal on them records, and like, and just seeing how striking that was, and seeing up, I could vividly picture Electro 4 in it, and I remember walking past them and thinking, I don't know anything that's on there, but I'm gonna, as soon as I've got enough money, I'm gonna buy one of them, because
they were currency in the sort of fourth or fifth year. Someone would buy one, and everybody else would copy it because, oh, I've got Electro 5, I've got Electro 9, I've got, that was it. Yeah, if you had an Electro tune that no one else had, that was, yeah, you were the man.
Fantastic. All right. Well, let's talk about our favourite pieces of album artwork, and it's not limited to one. If you've got a few, we can chat through them. I'll start with you, Paul.
Yeah, a few again. First one that I was looking into it last night, actually, because it's one of my favourite albums anyway. It's Heaven Up Here by Echo and the Bunnymen.
Yeah.
So it's the one where they're on a beach, they're standing on a beach, and it's like they've got their back to you. It's four of them on the picture, and the reflections in the water, sort of like on the beach, and there's all these seagulls sort of flying around. And apparently they had to throw some fish up. And they had a bucket of fish with them to make the seagulls kind of fly at the right time. But anyway, so it's my favourite album anyway by them. I was looking into who the photographer was, and it turns out it's the same guy. He's called Brian Griffin. It's the same guy who did Depeche Mode's first five album covers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, same fella, yeah. And he also did the Bunnymen's first one, I think, as well. Yeah, so the first and second albums.
Do you think labels had this, like, go-to phone number for, like, I would just sign this miserable band, phone this guy?
I think he's just done a book of like a Depeche Mode book of the album covers and other photographs and stuff like that. I've just found out in the last 24 hours, basically. Yeah,
and I take it he was then switched for Anton Corbin, I presume.
I think he might have been. Yeah, I think he.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Then up until, so what's, it was a Construction Time again.
Yeah.
Then so, was Some Great Reward after that. And then the one after that, whatever the fifth album was, can't remember what that's called. Black Celebration, maybe?
Yeah, Black Celebration. It would have been.
Yeah. I think he did up to there. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's weird, like when you find like an artist, like, because Corbin done Unknown Pleasures, right? Did he?
I don't think, no, he didn't.
No, that was Peter Saville.
Peter Saville did that, yeah.
Of course, yeah. Corbin done the video for Atmosphere, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Corbin done Joshua Tree?
He did, right? Yeah. And then lots of Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode stuff, yeah.
And the Bunnymen as well. He did the Bunnymen sort of.
Oh, did
he? Yeah. I've got like a program from one of their tours, 85, 86 sort of thing. And it's a love. There's loads of lovely pictures of these done in there. So he was involved with them at some stage too, yeah.
Oh,
I think he might have done, you know, Bring On the Dancing Horses. I think that was Anton Corbin, yeah. Yeah, I think that was the, he did the video for that.
Oh, superb. Did you see the thing where Anton Corbin got to drum for Depeche Mode?
No.
He said it was like his dream to perform in Depeche Mode at one point, and he was a drummer. And they brought him on, and he drummed. I can't think what track it was, like it was a few tours ago. But yeah, he got to come out and drum for Depeche Mode, which is pretty cool. Well, look, let's do one each, and then we'll throw some honourable mentions in as we work our way round. Sinubi.
It's difficult because I never really took a huge amount of notice. I wasn't a sort of music nerd growing up. I didn't buy vinyl. It was my dad's collection. But I just love The Wall, Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Just, that's it. I can't get over it. It's one of my favourite albums. It's not my favourite Pink Floyd album, but it's just the look of it. It's perfect.
Yeah.
My mum and dad brought me the video of the film. And obviously it's got the same cover. Yeah. So the album and the film together were just, nice little set.
And you know, you say there's not a lot to it, but I don't think album artwork does have to have a lot to it. You can look at your album covers like Maiden and like Dookie and things like that are really busy and got loads of stuff that you can sit and stare at, which, you know, I love doing, but I think there's also...
I still remember the album cover to Hysteria, Def Leppard.
Yeah.
And it's like a pound shop version of all of those. I'd still listen to it as well.
But interestingly, there was graffiti because the town I was born in, Tilbury, it was when they were making The Wall, all the skinheads in the film are Tilbury skins. And there was this horrible kind of gang of right-wing skinheads in my hometown. And they were a ferocious bunch. And, I was too young to really know a lot, but you'd see them stomping around and they were terrifying. And they all got cast as the skinheads in The Wall. Which kind of brought even more notoriety to them after that. You know, they were famous and evil. It was definitely a sort of thing that you keep your head down on the way to school when you see one of them stomping around.
They got paid for being racists, really.
Like, essentially. You
know, which is horrible. Give them a bit of cash. Yeah,
absolutely. We got AD. What you got, mate?
I'll go with, I say I only found out about this a couple of hours ago, but I'm going to go with Hard by the Breeders, the reason is because when like Vaughan Oliver, so I love Vaughan Oliver stuff, because he did all the Pixies stuff like that as well, but when the Pixies, he said he never put the Pixies on any record cover saying, if you want to be big rock stars, go ahead and do it, but you're not going on my album cover sort of thing. And then for the pod, he puts himself on. The first one that he does with Kim Deal, he puts a picture of himself with erect eels as a penis, which he said he had in his fridge for he had his fridge for about a year, these eels, and he didn't know what to do with them. And he stuck metal coat hangers through them and used them on himself as a penis for their album. And Kim Deal was like, You wouldn't put me on a cover ever, and now you're going to put yourself on one of my covers. So it's quite a nice story to it. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I did not know that. Like, it was strange when I sort of Googled iconic sort of alternative pieces of artwork. That one was on there. What was the second Pumpkins album, not Gish.
Siamese Dream.
Siamese Dream, that was on there. And I guess that was the time that maybe a lot of us in that kind of early part of the 90s were buying guitar records, and there were so many incredible sleeves. And you mentioned the Breeders, but like the Pixies artwork's fantastic.
Yeah, I've got one. Preempting everyone tonight, aren't you?
Oh dear, I'm going to stop talking. Steve, what you got, mate? So we go Stephen first, then we go up to you, Steve.
Well, Mr. Newby's sort of stolen my thunder. I had two that I was going to mention. One was Hysteria by Def Leppard. And the other one was Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, for a wee bit of variety. And another iconic sort of image, and as a whole album, again, with The Wall sort of thing, that's an album experience of track listing. Just, you've got to sort of listen to it as a whole thing, as opposed to pulling out a song from it.
It's interesting, isn't it? How, like, you know, we mentioned War of the Worlds and, you know, all of these... Because I'll throw one of mine in, and one of mine's just The Sleeve of Autobahn by Kraftwerk. And that's, like, again, like, pretty cold, not huge amounts to it. It's just that, I guess it's a road markings of an Autobahn, you know, sort of blue cover. And I remember just staring at that. And that's obviously just, I won't call Kraftwerk prog, but, you know, but it's... It's still that big kind of vast journey of music, like Floyd and like War of the Worlds. And it's, you know, it was a time then, I think, where there was a lot of experimentation in what you could get away with the album format. And certainly definitely a progression in, you know, you look at, I've got a book somewhere and I don't really know, I know very little about Yes and prog, to be honest, in general. But it was a book by whoever it was that designed all the Yes album covers. Oh, my God. I mean, that guy was a genius. And, you know, the artwork, I know the artwork better than I know any song by Yes. It was, but I do think there was, it was around a time where I think everything was evolving with what you could do under the sort of banner of an album, you know. Oh, yeah, look at that. Fantastic. That's a great sleeve. Oh, yeah. Mr. For those that can't see this, I love always holding up some Yes album covers there. I'm not surprised you like a bit of prog, Si. You got that vibe to you, mate. Oh, dear. Big Steve.
Well, you'll have to bear with me because this is going to get a bit graphic.
Okay.
I'm going to have to adjust. I like this album cover so much, I had it drawn on me permanently.
Oh, I'm loving this.
Can you see my leg?
Yeah.
That's on my thigh. So that's massive. It's pretty big. But it's by a... I mean, they're sadly split up now because the guitarist became a rabbi of all things. It's by a band called Maith. It's M-A-E-T-H. I randomly found them doing a Bandcamp deep dive. So just like rolling through genres on Bandcamp. And I found this album. The album's called Oceans Into Ashes. And it just blew my socks off. And the kind of, like you say, the little thumbnail is that picture on the Bandcamp. So I saw that and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then give it a listen, and then just like, I listened to it solidly for about 3 months, like literally every day for about 3 months in the car. It was listening to the CD in my car, so I just kept on playing and playing and playing. And I was like so obsessed with it, I then got it drawn on me permanently.
Superb, love that, love that. And so, would your record shops that you would have walked past as a you know, in your formative years, been in Basildon, Steve?
No, I mean, they would have been, yeah, but I tended more to get my music from going to gigs rather than, because the stuff that I would listen to, like, it was on such small distribution labels. When I used to order stuff from, like, HMV and things like that, the only person ordering it from that distro label was me. So they couldn't order anything until they had, like, 300 quid's worth of orders. So I'd get nothing for months, and then I'd order enough, and it would be like 300 quid, and all of a sudden I'd have to shell out 300 quid because all these albums come in for me. In the end, I just stopped doing that and just went to see the band instead and bought stuff from them direct, so they directly got the money.
Yeah. Did anyone ever buy into the live bootlegs that you'd get at Camden Market and things like that, where you'd get the most poorly recorded like cassette that had been like desk recording that had been like pressed onto vinyl, and they'd always put like a slightly schneidy looking sort of bit of album artwork on it, and then you'd get it home and it'd be like, here we go, this is going to be great. I was at this concert and it would sound horrific. And yeah, I've got about 6 or 7 of them in my record collection. And
I bought some left on Milton Keynes Bowl or Asia.
I've got that. That's one of the ones I've got.
The double. It was like a double, and one of them was blue and one of them was red. Yeah. And it was the whole set.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Bought it on the way out.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got mine from Camden Market. And, yeah, horrific. I think, did they release that video? I think they might have released that concert on video. Yeah. Okay, right. Brett, have you been yet?
No, you kind of stole my thunder. I was going to go with Craftwork as well.
Do you know what? I need to shut up, don't I? Just keep muffling straight in and nicking everyone's tunes.
I was going to go with Craftwork, but I was going to go Tour de France, because you look at that album cover and you go, yep, it's a men singing about bike racing.
Yeah,
that's it. And it's fantastic. And I listened to it today and I still love it. So, as you do, Dr. Google's flicking in the background.
Don't move on yet. Don't move on yet, Brett. Let's talk about it, because you mentioned Tour de France, but which is an incredible cover. But even in Gray's Library, they had Man Machine and Trans-Europe Express on vinyl. And it again, a bit like War of the Worlds, it freaked me a little bit. I couldn't understand them. I was like, are they, because they looked so cold and like and zero expression. And when you heard the music, again, it was quite cold. And yeah, I don't know. It there's a sinister edge to them album sleeves. And I think like Kraftwerk, I don't think I could understand what they were. And I think that curiosity and weirdness, as a kid, you're always drawn to something that's a little bit weird and that you can't quite understand. You know, I guess that could be horror films or anything, you know.
And on that Tour de France album, especially Electrocardiogram, it's all done by noises from the race and breathing and stuff. And you're like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I went to see them about 5 or 6 years ago at the Albert Hall, and the introductions... You're sitting there, and they said, you've got to be in your seat by 7:30. And over the period of about 10 minutes, the lights would slowly dim, and there'd be this background buzz. And you didn't notice till a few minutes in, you're like, it's a really weird noise. And it suddenly stopped and bang, they came on and went straight in with, I can't remember what the tune was, straight in hard. And it's like, that's amazing. I didn't realise that I was listening to anything and the lights were dimming. And then, but yeah, that was fantastic. It was a 3D show and stuff. Yeah, I cannot say enough good things. We had the reasonably cheap seats at about 150 quid. And we looked at my brother and went, next time I'm going there in the front. I don't care how much it costs. I'm there. Yeah. Utterly, utterly wonderful.
Yeah. Has anyone else here seen Kraftwerk?
Yeah, I saw them in 91 in the Apollo Manchester. And it was one of those times, I think it was back in those days when you could buy a ticket like 2 days before and still get a ticket sort of thing. And right about that time, they brought an album called The Mix, which was kind of like...
Yeah,
brilliant. It was superb. And I've seen pictures of it since then. It looks a bit crappy compared to like how they are now.
But it was
superb. And everybody there was a real sort of techno head, basically.
And the amount of money that's going over the bar and the merch is like, people have bought, you know, hundreds of pounds on stickers and T-shirts. And so, you know, you guys are really into this.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, has everyone had a shout-out? Have I missed anyone yet? Sorry, mate.
That's changed. When you go at the end, you change, don't you, all the way through? I've actually changed one. I've got all my records out ready to show you the album cover, and I didn't get this one out even. And it's got to be the Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me.
Oh, great show.
The album cover just... It looks a little bit erotic and dirty. You can't quite work out what it is. And I think it completely sums the whole album up. It's so dark and it's just an incredible album cover.
I don't know if he's pausing for thought there, but I think, no, you're back. You got lost there, Si. It looked like he was looking quite pensive and took a big pause to say something profound, but you just froze. And now you put yourself on mute. This is your big moment and you've blown it, mate.
That's probably better. No, but I think that wasn't my choice to start with, but I think that whenever I see it, and it reminds me of being young, and I think it really stood out to me.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, if it wasn't your first choice, have you got your... Let's start getting some honourable mentions in. So we'll stay on you for this one. Have you got? I know you said you got some sleeves, and you showed us some Yes ones. What other ones you got there? Let's bring them up. But
the Yes ones weren't in my pile. They were just down here on the floor. Oh, okay. Now, one of my favourite albums. I don't know why. It's because it's stupid as fuck. Is Stephen Stills.
I mean, I don't know what that is. It looks like a man in the snow playing an acoustic guitar with
a giraffe.
Yeah, it is. Giraffe
standing next to him.
Stephen Stills in the snow with a giraffe, and I've always loved it. I love the album, but it's fucking stupid as fuck. It really is stupid. But you've got far too quick. I won't talk about it. I'm Funkadelic.
Oh, that's a great shout. That's a great shout. Yeah, One Nation Under a Groove.
All that. Yeah. And it's big, and you've got a pair of tits in there.
Open up that gatefold. I mean, yeah, what more do you want?
Gatefold's good. I've got one for Cy Newby that. Springsteen's
it's
iconic, isn't it?
How iconic is that though? I mean, just looking at that, it's, you know, you don't
if you didn't, if you like didn't know who it was there and the words weren't on there, you'd know who it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd forgotten about that. Cheers, Si.
No, but you've got, I think. This is going to get nasty. You don't even realise. I've got to go for that though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Screamadelica by.
It sort of speaks for itself, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not even going to show you the one I was going to choose originally. Let someone else keep going.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking if I've got anything left that I haven't said.
What are we going to see
last? Because I just keep nicking everyone else's. So
I want to see what's going on with Kirsten.
Yeah, I mean, literally, Kirsten's absolutely unaware that she's got her camera on. And at the moment, all we can see is her feet walking.
And this could get really interesting, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think let's.
Is it Richard Ashcroft too? Can we start barging people out of the way?
There we go. I can stop the video. Yeah. Right. Okay. Who's got a couple of honourable mentions they want to throw in next? Go on, Brett.
Technically, I'm squeezing the limit a bit. It's an EP, but Window Licker by Aphex Twin. You see that cover, and I mean, it was late 90s, and the CGI wasn't brilliant. You're suddenly like, what? What is that? It's all good. But Straight Outta Compton by NWA, you just look at them looking at you, and you think, I know exactly what I'm getting out of that album. They're angry young men.
Absolutely. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Oh, do you know what I want to shout out? Because it's just popped into my head. And I've got a headlight hole, so I just want to throw it in now. That weren't a tenuous link to say Nine Inch Nails. Populate Yourselves record covers were absolutely phenomenal. I don't know who the designer was, but, again, quite a pioneering band as well at the time, you know, sort of fusing the electronic stuff. I just remember, like, every time I put a record out, Size Love was just held up one to the camera. It's phenomenal artwork, like, really, really interesting.
They're still touring. They're coming around.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Clint Mansell's in them anymore, is he? I think he's making film scores and stuff. Wonderful. And I think I'll go to Big Steve now, because I know you've just touched on NWA, and let's discuss De La Soul, because you did hold up 3 Feet I Am Rising, mate.
Yeah, it's my favourite hip hop album of all time.
And mine.
When I was little, I went through 3 cassettes, because I just used to listen to it constantly, and it just used to snap the cassette. Yeah. So I ended up having to buy it 3 times to just carry on just listening to it. And I can still do it, like, word perfect from start to finish, even all the skits, all the little bits and pieces, the samples, everything. I love it so much.
Yeah. It's one of those perfect albums that there's not a daft track on it. From start to finish, it's a work of art. I cannot agree with you more.
And I think it was one of them things that when it dropped, that record, you had, the tail end of Acid House, and then what was happening in Manchester with the kind of Manchester scene, and then there was early mutterings of acid jazz with, like, early Brand New Heavies, and what was going on with Soul to Soul and the Sound System Culture and Massive Attack. And it just felt that, like, whatever one of them genres you was into, when you heard 3 Feet I Am Rising, everybody went, this album's just for nuts. And, like, it holds up so well, I think. It's a masterpiece. And I'm going to, as much as I love I Know, which was one of the first ever 12-inch records I could afford, Treadwater, that's the track on that album. Treadwater's the tune. Yeah. So good. What a band.
And I also remember when De La Orgy comes on, like, having to turn it down so, like, my mum and dad wouldn't hear what I was listening to.
Oh, fantastic.
If I could, I'd like to,
of course,
like to give a shout out to a band I've mentioned before called And So I'll Watch You From Afar. Yeah.
This is last week or 2 weeks ago. Sorry.
Yeah, they did, yeah. This is the 10th anniversary 4LP limited edition that they did.
So Scythe leafing through an absolute gem of a bit of packaging there, like mega gatefold, that looks amazing.
I genuinely cannot recommend, if you like kind of instrumentally guitar stuff, I cannot recommend it more to go and see them live. Genuinely, just mind blowing.
Fantastic. AD?
Just got, because I mentioned the Breeders one earlier, I got the Pixies Bossa Nova, which I love. The fact that Vaughan Oliver used to take, like, literally take the lyrics and create something with them. So he's got, like, obviously it's got the glass globe on it that they had made with Pixies rounded from the track all around the world, on there. Like, so it's, I just love the way he used to do stuff like that. Just used to take the visuals he did on Doolittle as well, just take visuals from the lyrics and represent them on the album covers. Just thought it was really clever and neat idea to
do.
And I did it when I was at university. I did graphic design at university. And I did that. That's what I wanted to be, an album cover designer. And he was like my inspiration to do it. But I was kind of told it was a dying art and it wouldn't last. And I was put off it by my shoes, which it kind of was, because it was going towards, I guess there was CDs, and it was that the CD was kind of dying out then as well. So yeah, you kind of could see that it possibly would die out. But obviously, nobody kind of reckoned on the vinyl revival, did this. So, I think you had a point earlier though. There's not been any real iconic album covers for a long time. I don't think so. Yeah. I haven't said that. So.
Yeah, Stephen.
Nothing. Blank. That was my three that I sort of had. They've all been mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, you just did you say you drew a blank? Because I should shout out Going Blank Again as well by Ride, which is a wonderful piece of artwork that's popped in my head. That's a gem. Who else has got some honourable mentions?
Got a couple. First one, and it's also one that I bought just on the cover alone, was Paul's Boutique by the Beastie Boys. Because they'd not done anything for a couple of years, and then I was like, oh God, what's this? And it's kind of like, it's an amazing cover, because it's like, well, I think the version I've got is like a triple gatefold or something. So there's kind of like four panels on each side, and it's all kind of one photograph, like a panoramic view of the whole sort of square in somewhere in New York. I was just really intriguing, because you could just find lots of stuff in it, and it's amazing. And at the time when I bought it, I had no clue where it was. I thought it was in Brooklyn, but it's actually somewhere in Manhattan. So it's somewhere kind of like downtown, sort of Lower East Side, somewhere like that, I believe. But obviously Google tells you that now, doesn't it? And people go there, and there's, you know, probably pilgrimage of this there and everything. Yeah, but that's a really good album as well. It's one of my favorite albums too.
Yeah.
Same year as 3 Feet High as well. Yeah, so
it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's so strange, different, isn't it? In just that short space of time, you know, from having one of the biggest selling rap records of all time with License to Ill to Paul's Boutique coming out, and essentially no one giving a shit. And like, you know, it was just a massive flop. And I guess to a degree, Check Your Head wasn't a huge commercial success. I know you'd see like MTV had looped Something's Gotta Give and stuff like that, and So What You Want would get a bit of rotation, but it wasn't really until Sabotage, the second single, when it Get It Together, I think, come out before Sabotage. And then it just, whatever happened, it reignited it, and thankfully we got exposed to just some of the greatest music ever, and you know, the documentary to come out a couple of years ago,
that was good.
Phenomenal.
If you flip it round, I think Paul's Boutique is their best album. You flip it around, Paul's Boutique is their best album.
I'm going to name drop something that was one of the coolest things I've ever done, right? And I was on a birthday, I think it's like, I don't know, about 8 or 9 years ago, and I'd hired this little Airbnb in Norfolk, just and me and a couple of my mates, and Pip was there, and Chris, who I do Hardcore Listening with, and we'd booked to go and do this escape room, and I didn't know, but as we got in the car and we was driving there, I put Six Music on, and we'd not long had Huey Morgan on Hardcore Listening, we're not mates, but he DJed at Pip's night a couple of times. Pip's friends with him, and I didn't know that Pip had messaged him as we was making this drive, and I'm just driving along listening to Six Music, and all of a sudden I just heard Huey, who's got one of the coolest voices ever, just saying this song goes out to my boy Stu, and happy birthday. And here's your favourite Beasties tune. He played Eggman for me off of Paul's birthday. And I was like, it's a good birthday this is. Huey's just played the Beasties for me on Six Music. But that was a right little moment. That was, yeah, what a tune that is. Okay, anyone else got some honourable mentions they want to throw in?
Just got one more. There's a couple, but the one I'm going for, we've all been very highbrow, but I'm going to take it back to about 10 or 11 year old me, and it's Like a Virgin.
Oh, I've got True Blue. I'm glad I didn't beat you to it, but yeah, 100%. Like 100%.
None of your highbrow music nonsense. It was just 11 year old me.
Most of mine are from that era, because I think you're so impressionable, and the visual aesthetic of pop stars was so strong then, like with Madonna, you know, you'd never seen anything like her. You know, she was just like so street and cool, certainly then. And then by the time it got to True Blue, just seeing that kind of iconic side profile with the blue and the, you know, the blonde hair, I remember just thinking, this is the coolest thing ever. And to stay in that time, mine's Purple Rain. Prince on a motorbike. But I remember just seeing that and thinking, not really understanding what Prince was, like, because he was everywhere. And hearing, I think my introduction would have been When Doves Cry, I think, when Purple Rain, the film, came out, and seeing that video and seeing him sort of scrapping with his dad and then getting on his motorbike and you know, and was it Apollonia, the girl, isn't it? And probably the first set of boobs I ever saw in a film as well was Apollonia's coming out the river. And that was a coming of age, that was. But it was just how iconic Madonna and Prince were, and you could say the same for the Thriller and Bad, you know, just a photograph of the artist, but so entrenched in the, you know, in music culture now, just because of there's such strong visuals going back to Grace Jones. Let's see if there was any others. I did make a little rough work. Speaking of iconic blondes, and also Kirsten's just mentioned any Bjork album cover, absolutely. Even talking about debut, just that fantastic photo of Bjork, you know, just looking as close to perfect as anybody could ever be on that. But Parallel Lines by Blondie, I want to throw in as well, you know, just an absolute iconic one. And the ones I wanted to shout out from Parents' Record Collection, I'm going to hold it up so you can see it, which is Goodbye Yellow Brick Road by Elton John. Gatefold, double yellow vinyl. My folks had that on. And I remember just like opening it up. And obviously the album sleeve, the front itself, is Elton sort of like walking through what looks like a wall into the Yellow Brick Road. And it just, I just thought it looked amazing. And then when I pulled the vinyl out, and it was yellow, I was like, this is something spectacular. Oh, there you go.
Oh, there we go.
Cy Love was literally just pulled the yellow vinyl out. Fantastic. Look at that. Yeah. Oh, it was a triple gatefold as well, wasn't it? Look at that. Oh, what a thing of beauty. That's the sort of thing that, like, as a young, thirsty lad for music and music culture, that delivers. And the other one is somebody stepping, and I'm not sure what records are on it, but the other one, which I'll just quickly show you, is Rod Stewart's Atlantic Crossing. And I remember seeing that and just seeing that massive flared trouser and Rod just looking like an absolute don back then. And just thinking, well, I think I might be wrong, Do You Think I'm Sexy's on that record, and I think that may have been why my folks bought it, because that was obviously a huge sort of disco hit. And yeah, the idea of calling it Atlantic Crossing as well, and going super, super like American with the disco influence and stuff. So I think that was all I had. Did I have anything? Oh, God, yeah. And of course, packaging, one last one. Ladies and Gentlemen, Floating in Space by Spiritualized. Just getting that, I don't know who had that, but if you bought it on CD, it come in like a tablet box, and you would pull it out, and it was in plastic with the foil on it, and you didn't want to open it, but you'd pop the foil and take the CD out, and it was literally just done up like a pack of tablets. And yeah, absolutely fantastic. And they'd done a special edition, which was probably about 2 foot by a foot, which every track on it was a standalone CD. So you had the whole pack of tablets. It was a thing of beauty. I don't own that. I wish I did. But yeah, what a piece of kit that was, and what a record that was as well. Okay, I think that's all I can throw in the mix for that. I don't know if there's any other little things to bring up. I don't think so. Also, did anybody else? One of the things that I would do if I had mates coming over, and I'd always had my records sort of stacked against the wall before, you know, I would afford to have a cabinet to put them in. Did anybody certainly if they were having a girl or a guy over, try and put their coolest record at the front, just so when people walked in,
yep,
your coolest record was at the front, you know. there's a lot of nods of agreement there. Fantastic. All right. Well, look, thanks ever so much for joining us tonight. It's always lovely chatting records with you all, and we'll definitely do music videos next time, and I do look forward to it. And in the meantime, thanks ever so much to you all for supporting Off the Beaten Track and being patrons. You're a lovely bunch of people. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to press stop, and thanks for listening.